start with the chant, verse 1, and we'll go to verse 2. Okay. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Naman Mohabdaye Namaha. Naman Mohabdaye Namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya. Anantananda Krishnaya. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Kadachinahamapriyaha. Kadachinahamapriyaha. Brahmaeva Hamatasiddham. Brahmaeva Hamatasiddham. Sachidananda Lakshanam. Sachidananda Lakshanam. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Kadachinahamapriyaha. Kadachinahamapriyaha. Brahmaeva Hamatasiddham. Brahmaeva Hamatasiddham. Sachidananda Lakshanam. Sachidananda Lakshanam. Sandhi. Aham Asmi Sada Bhami Kadachin. Actually, it'd be Kadachit. Na Aham Apriyaha. Kadachit. Na Aham Apriyaha. Brahma Eva Aham Ataha Siddham Sat Chit Ananda Lakshanam. Aham Asmi Sada. Aham I Asmi I am. Sada always. I always am. Aham Asmi Sada. I always am. Then Aham Sada Bhami. I always shine. Means self-evident. Bhami means when something is shining. We don't have it. We don't have this in English, really. Mm. When something is presenting itself. So from its own standpoint, it's shining. So here, I always am the sat, the existence. I always am. My being always is. And it is always self-evident. That's the bha. Nothing else is self-evident. This isn't self-evident. This is shining after me. I need a vritti, a thought modification, in order for this to be known. I don't need a thought modification, vritti, for me to be known, because I always shine, bha. I always shine. The sun is bha. The sun always shines. It's self-evident. It doesn't need another sun. I mean, within relatively. It doesn't need another sun to come in to illumine it, right? So it's its own light, like that. But then, the reason we say it's really not self-evident, the sun's not self-evident, because from its own standpoint, within duality, it's self-evident, but it needs to, it can only be known by me, right? Mm-hmm. It's not known of its own accord, it's known by me. So the sun, in that case, becomes an object of knowledge that requires a vritti to be known. But from within the creation, the sun doesn't require another sun to light it up. So we can use it as an example, right? Yeah. But so here, aham, sada means always, means that there's not once in a while, you know? Or always means sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. No, this is being itself. Being is not a little bit of being or a big amount of being. Being simply is. And so even when you look at everything in the creation, this is, this is, this is. There is no experience internally or externally that is not, right? It always is. But it always is only as long as it's there, right? Mm-hmm. So even though there is no experience internally or externally that does not have this asti, isness, being, the thing that is gaining this being is itself something that comes into being and goes out of being. Right? There's nothing in the creation that's not subject to change. It's just the nature of the creation. The smaller you go, the bigger you go. It's subject to change. because it's subject to change, this is, change is equal to birth and death, right? On a level of anything in the creation that is changed, changes, it comes into being, goes out of being, it has a birth and a death. And even in between its major birth and death, there are little births and deaths, right? Because change, 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 no matter how small you go or how big you are, change is still occurring. Because change is occurring continually within duality, you cannot say from its own standpoint that it always is. Because the instant there is any change, the prior condition no longer is. So we can never say about anything in the creation, sada asti. Asti would mean it is. Asmi means I am. We cannot never say sada asti, sada asti, sada asti. It always is, it always is, it always is, it always is. We can never say that. What we can say is the being which it enjoys, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, always is. That is never mutating in any way whatsoever. But it is also being, is also not objectifiable. To be existing within time and space. If it was objectifiable, I could say, oh, look, there's the being over there, right? I could have a subject-object relationship with being, with existence. I do not have a subject-object relationship with being. I am being, right? And this amness that I am, which is not objectifiable. Can you look at your amness? Can you look at it? It's not objectifiable. It just is. Now, this amness that I am, which is self-evident, because, right? I don't say, oh no, I'm not. What do you mean I am? No, I am. It's self-evident me. What is so powerful to understand is this self-evident amness, which we all take for granted and in the meditation and in teaching, we isolate and differentiate it so that I can actually recognize my being in reference to all of my other, all objectifiable experiences. This, what I call me, this amness, is not objectifiable, which means that the amness that I am is the amness that all objects enjoy. We say, it is, it is, it is, it is. Swamiji will say, okay, think of it like this. It am, it am, it am, it am, it am, it am. Or I say, I is, and everything is. The difference between these, what seems to be a difference, is that the isness or the amness that I am, right, which is non-objectifiable, because it's non-objectifiable, is sada. Sada means it always is. It's not subject to change because it's not objectifiable. So this amness is what we call the adhishtana. Adhishtana means the thing which all of every other experience depends upon for its being. All of this we call mithya. Anything that exists within time and space is called mithya. Mithya means it depends totally on something else for its being. The snake is mithya, the rope is satyam, is real, is sada, always there. The pot is mithya because it depends totally 100% on the clay, which is what the actuality of what is there. So what if I want to know in reference to this whole creation, what is mithya? And what is satyam? What is actually here? What is mithya is going to be... I'm going to crack the door for Lucky. Aww.
Come on.
What is mithya, you know? Down, go down. Down.
Oh, Lucky boy.
Okay, do what you want there. I say, what is mithya is anything and everything that is objectifiable. That's enough. That's all you need. Just the mere fact that it's objectifiable, that means it exists within time and space. It exists within time and space. It's subject to change. That's it. If it's subject to change, it can have no being of its own. Not possible. Because it comes into being and goes out of being. Therefore, it doesn't have being, right? It borrows being. And everything in the creation, internally and externally, borrows being in that way. Being is what we call the adhishtana, that which is actually there. Rope snake, rope is the adhishtana, what is actually there. Snake is mithya, that which depends totally for its being on whatever the adhishtana is. Clay pot, pot is mithya, clay is the adhishtana, because that what is actually there. And these are relative examples, but nevertheless, you can see the relationship. So here, every single thing that I experience internally and externally that exists within time is being objectifiable, it exists within time, subject-object relationship, it is mithya. If it is mithya, it depends 100% upon something else for its being, because it comes into being and goes out of being. So what is it in this creation that is not mithya, that is not dependent, because it's subject to change, it's objectifiable, everything, the entire creation is that way? In the bottom, you can say, like, well, the clay of the clay pot is satyam. Not really. It's only satyam in reference to the pot. But not in reference to itself. In reference to itself, it breaks down into molecules, quarks, etc. It endlessly breaks down. And it's endlessly itself subject to change. So in the end, you have to resolve this creation into that which is not subject to change, that which is not objectifiable. Otherwise, it has no being. There is no being. And you could say, well, that's all right. There doesn't have to be any being. This can all just be empty. Emptiness. It's all empty. Sometimes shunyata in Buddhism, when it's translated as empty, that emptiness is then retranslated another way as the void or non-existence. This is just a confusion on the part of people who haven't studied deeply into Buddhism. From a Vedantic standpoint, we'll stay there. You can't say that in the analysis of any nama-rupa, any name and form, doesn't matter, that because it is infinitely, you can say infinitely divisible, it can go into an infinite regress in terms of this form is made of these smaller forms, it's made of these smaller forms, these smaller forms, it can go into an infinite regress. Therefore, at the end, there is nothing. There is only form, there is no substance, because of the infinite regress. But the problem with that is that you use the term infinite regress. Mm-hmm. And as long as it exists within time and space, there is an infinite regress. As long as it takes up space. Smaller and smaller and smaller forms. Mm-hmm. Now the thing is, if you get to what is actually there, the actual substance, in the end, the actual substance of what is there, and you say what is there actually as the adhishtana is non-existence. After you've taken all the forms off, what is actually there is non-existence. Then this form that you're talking about is not existent. The form that you're talking about itself is non-existent. Because you've taken the substance of what is actually there as the substance of the form, and you say now that that substance is non-existent. If you say that, then there is no experience of the form which you're experiencing. It's not possible, because it's not there. Literally, non-existence means it's not there. They use examples in the Vedanta, like the horn of a rabbit. They were convinced that rabbits didn't have horns. Okay, so horn of the rabbit does not exist. Son of a barren woman does not exist. Flowers in the sky, tree growing in the sky, does not exist. These are just examples of things that you cannot have the experience of because they're not there. As opposed to this world that we experience, we call it mithya. We experience it, but in the end, these names and forms, right, have no independent existence for us to say that they really exist in and of themselves. They don't. They exist because of their adhishtana. Like the pot exists because there is clay. You take the clay out, there's no pot. You know, if you take the rope out, there's no snake. So this whole creation breaks down into mithya, not non-existence, because non-existence, something that's non-existent, you can't experience it, it's not here. But we do experience this, but we say that this experience that we have, all of it is infinitely divisible, and everything, because it is bound by time, so it's infinitely divisible, so you can't find anything past the form. No matter how small you get, you can't get to the substance, because you're using your sense organs in order to try to perceive the infinitely small form, but the infinitely small form has an infinitely small substance. See what I mean? So you simply can't get there. Also, in reference to this creation, everything comes into being and goes out of being. So it's bordered by non-existence. If it itself were non-existent, right? If its being was non-existent, then you couldn't have the experience of it, because it comes from non-existence and it goes into non-existence. So what is giving it existence then? Well, what is giving it existence is that which is free from form. It is, and it is free from form. That which is and is free from form cannot be objectified. It can only be. I am that. So, aham sada asmi. I am that being which is free from form. The being which, in terms of the upadis, or conditioning adjuncts, my body, my mind, my sense organs, my moods, and my emotions, all of these get the I. You know, I am this, I am this, I am this, I am these thoughts, I am these moods, I am this conglomerate of all of these things put together. The ahankara, the I notion, takes my own being and superimpose it on these upadis, these things that can take the eye. The eye doesn't get superimposed on a chair or on this, you know, or on this or on anything. It gets superimposed only on the body, mind, sense organs because of the mind and the subtle body, etc. But that superimposition is exactly that, a superimposition. Because everything that I'm superimposing me on comes into being and goes out of being and is infinitely divisible. Whether I'm talking about a chair, or I'm talking about the body, or I'm talking about my mind, or I'm talking about my brain, or I'm talking about my memories or my relationships, all of it comes into being and goes out of being. It's in constant change. So none of this, all of this enjoys my being completely 100%, but I, being itself, is totally free of this, because I am not an object in the creation which is subject to time and space. Otherwise, I wouldn't be either. I would be mithya, depending upon something which is non-objectifiable and not subject to time and space. That's what we call, that one is what we call the pratyagatma in terms of my body, mind, sense organs. This innermost conscious being, which is always, always is. I always am. And this amness, which is my self-experience, is actually the amness of all beings. The amness which is called isness for all beings that can't say am. Right? The beings that can't say am, they get the isness. I can say my, and I can all categorize you, you are, okay? I am, and all of these things, they is. But we're only talking about one non-objectifiable being, you know, which is me. And this non-objectifiable me can't do anything. I can only be. I cannot do anything because I'm not an object in the creation with time and space and energy and movement and all of this type of thing. I'm just the Adhishtana, the actual being which the entire creation depends upon. I am the Adhishtana. I am the rope of the snake or the clay of the pot. I am the conscious, I am the being, for now the being, which is the being of everything. That's why in the meditation, if you say, I think it was yesterday's, recognize yourself, just being with yourself, that you have no form. You have no form. For form, that's objectifiable within time and space. Your being has no form. You do not change. You do not do any, you don't do anything. You just simply are. You simply are. And because you have no form, you're not contained. You're not a little pea in the pod. Your being, being formless, is the being of all that is. To be the being of all, you have to be the being of all that is, because being is not objectifiable, and none of these things have independent being. So your being is the being of all that is. Your being is the being which is Ishvara, the self of Ishvara, the Adhishtana of the entire creation. The entire creation, on every level, subtle and physical, enjoys the same being, which is me. But me, my being, has another quality to it, not a quality, but its nature. The nature of me and my being is that I am self-evident. No one is illumining me, like I need to illumine everything, you know. I don't need a vritti, I don't need a thought modification. My being is continually self-evident. It's called swata siddha. It's self-evident. Swa-prakasha, self-luminous, self-shining. As consciousness, consciousness itself is also not objectifiable. Look at the consciousness over here. What does your consciousness look like? Consciousness is being. To understand, well, how can consciousness be being? It's that consciousness is being, being is consciousness. Neither are objectifiable. And so we use a word that makes it easier for you. Being is self-evident. Because when you say self-evident, it gets rid of the idea that my being is performing a function of knowing. My being as self-evident me, as we were looking at in the meditation, my being as self-evident me, self-shining me, right, is not performing a function of knowing. It is self-evident, and so therefore, it's the self-experience. It is known. The consciousness, because it is consciousness, you are not a knower of it. It itself is known. It is self-evident. And this self-evident, self-shining me, right, is what anything that requires to be known, right, enjoys. When you have a vritti, you don't know anything in this creation without a vritti, without a thought modification. Your sense organs are coming into the mind, they have a thought modification called the vritti, and that vritti is known. It's the way they, we say the sattva manifests or enjoys consciousness while it is there. And so if you analyze your experience, you have, like right now, as we're looking into the room, whatever your experience you're having, that experience is known, right? Doesn't matter what it is. It could be a daydream. When you have a daydream, that is known. When you have an emotion, you're focused on your emotion, that is known. All experiences are known. But you know what? The knownness is simply the self-evident me. That self-evident me is superimposed on the vritti. There is no knownness independent of the Atma, of the self. And so I say, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. If I get rid of the entire creation, the knownness is still there. because that is my self-evident nature. And so we think of ourselves as a knower because we're superimposing knowership, the ahankar, knowership, on the mind and the sense organs, because the mind is taking, and with the sense organs, is taking, is creating this vritti. The vritti couldn't be created without the mind and the sense organs, so the mind and the sense organs become the knower, and the things which the mind and sense organs are directed at, the content that they're directed at, becomes the known. But that's not really what's happening. Really what's happening is the vritti is there, and when the vritti is there, it enjoys the knownness of the Atma, the self-evident nature of me. And so the knower-known dichotomy that is actually exists within duality, right? It exists within duality, is mitya. Because you're not always a knower. And things are not always known. I mean, this type of relationship is just, is something that is continually in flux, continually changing, and it depends upon also the high-functioning nature of your, or just the functioning nature of your sense organs and mind. If you lose a sense organ, then that particular type of knowership is not there. If you lose your ears, for instance, or you lose your eyes, or whatever, that form of knowership is not there. If your mind is daydreaming, the knowership that is required by the sense organs is not there. Now you're just in la-la land with your daydream. If you're dreaming also, the mind is able to have this type of a projection that we call dream, and then the dream is known, because the vritti is there. When the vritti is in an atisukshma form, in a very subtle form, and in resolved into its causal condition, then you have deep sleep. And then that deep sleep experience is known, but there's not the dichotomy of knower known within the deep sleep state. So it's just its knownness, the knownness of myself, me, and the antakarana, the mind that is in unmanifest condition. When you wake up, and this mind is awake, the knower-known dichotomy is there, then the mind says through memory, I slept so well last night. So what was that sleep like? I didn't know anything. Nothing was there. Nothing. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. I say that. That's a good proof for what your nature is, ananda. That your nature is ananda. Your nature is beloved. Absolutely beloved. And you just love to get rid of absolutely everything else, including the knower. Wipe that thing out. Just let me be with myself. Just let me be with myself. There's no knowership in me at all. There is just the absolute completion, the absolute completion of my self-evident being, which is ananda. It's a completed state of what is what in want of nothing. You don't think when you're with yourself, I wish I were a knower. Only I could be a knower, maybe, this and that. That's the last thing, you don't care at all. You don't care at all. Your being is complete. It's the very adhishtana of the whole creation, which is mitya. Mitya means this has no essence of its own. I am that being. What's causing me the pain and the agony and the angst and all of this has to do with the ajnanam, self-ignorance, the self-ignorance which causes my mind to become so distraught. It gets so distraught at times because things aren't going well out here, and so I don't have a shantavritti. Mm-hmm. My mind is not relaxed. It becomes very worried, very kind of upset, a lot of angst because what I believe I need in order to be happy, that somehow is not working out. Somebody's taking it from me. Mm. Or Bhagavan is so mean. He's not letting me get this thing. He's not letting me get my way. So my mind is very distraught, and so then the knownness is illumining this distraught condition, and the ahankara, the I notion, is coming in, another vritti, saying, I am so unhappy, I am so hurt. Whereas as a jnani, what you need to do when your mind is acting out of this habitual ajnanam, habitual ignorance, it's okay. Just come home. You're confused, that's all. You just come home. You'll be fine. There's no problem. There's no problem. But the mind has to have enough knowledge to be able to say that. Okay, well that's the That's enough. That's the top line. Because the apriya, the priyam we're going to do, we'll do tonight. Swasti prajabhya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmanebhya shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshati parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yamksho varahitah Brahmanasantu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhak bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amitam gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.